hardest question for me to believe is it possible that God actually loves me? Not just loves me, because he has to love everybody. I learned that from mm-hmm. my first song in Sunday school, right? But he loves me like when he looks at me and looks at Jesus, he looks at us the same. He's like, whoa, no, the fall off between me and Jesus, it's so immense. But it came to me on stage that day. It's like, imagine God looking at Jesus, and then Jesus steps out of the way, and then you step in the picture, and his face doesn't change. That took my breath. I'd never said that before until in that moment right there. And it's like, because if that's true, like,
yeah.
Oh, then all right, so maybe some new things are possible.
Welcome to the aggressive life. I love my job when I get to have conversations with people who are very, very important to me. That's who I'm with today. I am with my Uncle Jim. Actually, yeah. He's not actually my uncle. It's a nickname he doesn't like that much, which means I want to say it. He's a good friend of mine, been a friend of mine for many, many, many years. His name is Jim Bergen. We pastor churches that have a lot of similarities with each other. Jim had met me at a very critical point in my life several years ago when I was out west and I was on my own and I was in a bit of a pit. I was in a bit of a desert, and I decided to reach out to him, and he said, just come hang out with me. And I went out with him, and man, he patched me up, and he encouraged me. He loved me. We hung out for a few days. Mm-hmm. My dog, Peanut, me, him, and his dog. And
I'm Peanut's Uncle Jim.
Peanut's Uncle Jim. That's exactly right. And man, he's just a really, really good friend who is aggressive. I have a lot of friends who might not be in down the pipe on the constitution of the aggressive life, but Jim is one of those folks. We share a lot in common. Probably the best thing is just to have us start talking. So welcome to the aggressive life, Jim Bergen!
Play the theme music, something, yeah.
Yeah. How are you, good man? I haven't hung out with you for at least 6 days now.
I know. Well, then you left camp and just went like elk hunting, right?
I did. Yeah. I did.
And
it was success.
I know. I saw the pictures. I was just setting you up so you could brag. Absolutely. Yeah, tell me about it, Brian. Yeah. 800-yard shot, you know, right?
No, it wasn't an 800-yard shot. It was I'll give you the whole story because you'll understand. Those of us who are not hunters, welcome to our geek out world. So it's not a normal hunt. It's not normal because this is on private land. Like, I have a normal hunt I'm doing in Colorado in your backyard near Buena Vista in a week. And that will be a normal hunt. That's going to be a ball buster. That's going to be 12,000-13,000 feet, gasping for air. And
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's pretty big, but again, that's made to look big because I'm back from him, you know.
I know how
you
it
know,
works.
You know how it works. Like when you're showing your fish, push the fish out.
Yeah.
So it was not a normal hunt because on private land, and the herd migrates through there. Mm-hmm. And so you seeing elk every single day. But what made it really interesting, Jim, is these elk, because they're migrating through, they're always moving. So I had two elk to take a shot at. Both of them were moving, not running, but they're just kind of meandering. It was never they were stopped. And okay, get my perfect rest, get my scoped out in. It was like, okay, they're moving. There they are, they're moving. I gotta get down, I gotta find something. The first one I missed on, he was at a little over 400 yards. And the guy was with me, I was like, I've never shot anything over 400 yards. I said, you got a 300? I said, yeah, it's fine. Just take the top of the spine, you'll be fine. Like, okay, well, the problem I had, I don't know if you've ever been like this, is when every single time the crosshairs are going behind the front shoulder, whether it's a crossbow, whether it's my bow, whether it's a rifle, I mean, dozens and dozens and dozens of muscle memory, even though he just said this to me, 90 seconds later, like, I forget what he said, and I go behind the shoulders. And so I missed him.
So he shot
that
low.
Guy. Shot low. And then I couldn't pick him up again. Now, the benefit, have you ever, do you do rifle or only archery, Jim?
Oh, right. I was doing archery, and then I had to have both my shoulders replaced. So I'm strictly rifle.
What?
Amazing.
You are amazing. What caliber do you use?
308.
308. Okay. Mm-hmm. Have you ever done a silencer on that thing?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So you're hunting with a silencer.
I've done both. I've done both. There was a suppressor on the can on the end.
Right.
Yeah. When I shoot my 338, you have to have a can on it because you'll go deaf. But that would cut an elk in half. But the 308, yeah, I put a can on the end of it. Just, I think it improves my accuracy a little bit too. I don't know why.
Well, I just got a can. A buddy of mine said that the waiting period with the ATF, he said it was just a few days for him, which last I researched, it was 6 months to a year. So I've just never gone through the whole thing. So he said a few days, like, man, I'm in. So I went and put in. It probably took me about 6 weeks to get it, which is a heck of a lot better than 6 months.
Yeah.
And the reason I did, and I found this to be the true is what I read on forums was that if you're hunting with a suppressor, because the sound's muffled, when you fire and if you miss, the deer's or the elk is a bit confused. They're not sure where it came from, and they don't bolt. And I found that out to be the case. It was like, what? They're like, walking.
It disperses the sound.
Right.
Like it shoots it out this, so they're like, I don't know where it came from.
So they don't know exactly where to run away from.
Yeah.
That's a good one. So the first one was that missed, but still couldn't get a second or third shot off, and so I missed him and were depressed. And then a few hours later, we found ourselves in another place and just came out of nowhere. We were ahead of the herd. We came up this place and we saw the herd coming up, and I sat there with a gun 50 yards away. They came up on the road, or his basic ATV trail, panting, looking for a bull, no bull, and there wasn't anything. So we're like, okay, let's head out, see if we can get in front of the herd. So we head out in this ATV. Again, this is not normal elk hunting. Head out in the ATV, try to get in front of the herd. If there is such a thing. And then out of nowhere, this big bruiser boy showed up. And then I did the same thing. It was walking. I'm just not used to it. So it's basically three shots. One shot took off a tine. One shot was a gut shot. And one shot was in the neck. And that was the end. So that was my story.
All right. Well, I don't know how that works. I've never missed my first shot.
Never have?
No. No, knock on wood. Yeah. No, it's all right.
Did you get an elk this year? Are you going out this year to elk hunt?
Not this year. I'm getting ready to have my back operated on in a couple of weeks, and so I've just been trying to get the farm ready to be down for a while. And then I've got horses, and I had to ship them out and ship them to Oklahoma to be trained while I'm on recovery and all that kind of stuff. So I'm just playing with my dogs right now, and I'm gonna try to get. So November 13th, I get back surgery, but I'm going to try to go kill some ducks between now and then with my dog.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what's your dog's name?
Gus.
Gus.
Gustifer.
Gustifer.
Yeah. He's a machine.
Yeah. Yeah. Is he a chocolate lab?
Black. His trainer, his name's Noah Parsons out of Wichita. He's the first American to take a British lab to field champion in England. No American's done that.
Wow.
So then the dog he took, he brought one of his sons back to the United States. His name's Boone. And then Gus is Boone's first litter. So Gus needs to do well so that Boone's stock goes up.
There you go.
He's a machine. I love that. I haven't done big game hunting in a while, but I've been doing a lot of waterfowl and upland. So
and you got your back issues. Fill us in on your back issues.
I'm just old. I think when I get to heaven, I'm just going to flop in. Like all my parts don't work. Like I left it all in the field, Lord, you know, but, so I've got, a fusion, and everybody goes like, oh, it's no big deal. And everybody goes, you all hate it. And like, shut up, you know? But I have to have four vertebrae put back together, and it's supposed to take 6 months to a year to recover, but I'll be riding a horse in four because I got to compete. I'm really into this horse thing right now. And so I'll be competing this summer again is my goal.
Was there a singular injury that caused this, or is this just 63 years of
going to the gym every day since I was 19, and then you know carrying packs in the mountains, and then you're at my cabin. Did I have my dry stack fence built when you were there? That wall
you had just finished it. Yeah,
Yeah, yeah. So that was like 6,000 rocks I picked up by hand and carried. And so after a while, just like, you know, there's a couple of things I think one of my testicles just blew out. I got another one, you know. So
it did for real? Have a testicle blow
it? No, but it felt like it. It felt like that was a really stupid thing to do in the mountains by yourself, is pick up a 150-pound rock and carry it. You're like, yeah, so, but this is what we do, right? We're aggressive.
Yep. Yeah, the awkward stuff is how you really jack yourself off, or at least me. Like, if I don't do everything by the book in terms of form, I am Scroogey. I'm done.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what? I'm 63. I don't hang out with anybody else my age. They all gave up. You know, they all gave up, and like, they went from middle age to elderly. And I'm like, you're boring. So everybody I hang out with is like 20 years younger than me.
Right.
And which is, you know, different stage of life, but it's like, I think that the life that we choose to live is just that. And like, I'm not done.
Right.
You know, I'm not done. I got a lot to do. I mean, I bought my first horse at 62 and did my first competition at 63. I have back surgery, but I'll do it again. And I still plan on hunting a lot and hiking a lot and shooting a lot of birds and shooting a bunch of more elk and, you know, getting a moose tag eventually one day and hiking that monster out. So, and then coming back to man camp if I can.
We'll get to man camp. Yeah, we'll get into that in a minute. But you just keep talking about other things I want to really dig into. Yeah, we'll get to man camp in a minute. But you just said something really fascinating. I found the case with myself too. You just said, how did you put it? People our age have given up? Is that what you said?
It's just like they gave up. Like they hit a date on a calendar and said, I guess I'm supposed to be old now, so yes, I'll just start acting that way. And listen, I don't want to be 20 again. You know, man, I did so much stupid stuff when I was 20. I think I've gone to the gym every day, almost every day of my life since I was 19 years old. And I don't know if it's Jordan Peterson or who said, like, you're going to have pain now or pain later. And like, so I get up at 4 o'clock every morning and I hit the gym, you know, because I'll do pain now so that I can have joy later, as opposed to I can just, you know, sit on the couch and have joy now and eat Doritos and stuff like that. And then when I hit 60 or 65, I'm in a wheelchair. It's like, no. So I've lived my whole life. Like I don't ever want to like be invited to go, you know, hey, Brian just called me and said, hey, he's got a hunt available in Idaho. Let's go. And I'm going like, I'm sorry, I'm too fat, or I'm too sick, or I'm too sore, right, or there, or a mission trip. Like, hey, I've done a lot of trips to Afghanistan, a lot of walking, a lot of standing, a lot of riding. I don't want to go like, you know, I just don't think I'm up to it. So I want to be, everything we do spiritually is lived out in this physical body. So you better take care of it.
Right.
Because I don't care what good thing you want to do. If your body is like broken and sitting on the couch because you've neglected it, it's like, I can't do what I used to do. Like I'd much rather hunt ducks from a blind than walk up 14,000 feet on a mountain and then carry a, you know, 200 pounds at a time down. I'll do it, but I can't do the same things I used to do. But man, I love farm life. I love ranch life. I love cabin life. I love hunting life. I love going to the gym. And everybody I work out was 20 years younger than me. And it's like, let's go. All my surgeries are related to injuries, you know. Last year I decided, I saw on YouTube how to do a muscle up, you know, where you grab the bar and then go up like that.
Yeah.
And I ripped my tricep off. But you know what? It's a great story, you know, as opposed to, you know, I was sitting on my porch and, you know, I don't know. It's like, my wife just rolls her eyes at me. But then the flip side of that, she'll look at me and go like, you probably need to go back to the gym. And I'm like, yeah, because she knows I thrive when I'm active and I die when I'm just sitting. So,
well, that's the thing about the aggressive life. The aggressive life doesn't mean, you know, I just go do stupid stuff all the time and just shoot myself in the foot. Yeah, that may happen, but it's I'm deciding the kind of life I want and I'm doing that life. Yeah. And I'm with you, man. I see people who are my age or less who just have, man, you've just given up. I'm doing this restoration of a 1952 Power Wagon.
Yeah.
It's one of my hobbies I like, is just restoring things. It'll take a few years to do, but it's kind of fun. When I was negotiating with which one to buy, there was about three or four of them we were negotiating with. You know the one thing that all of the sellers of the Power Wagons that needed restored, you know the one thing that they all had in common?
Mm-hmm.
They were all about my age, and they all were selling it because they couldn't lift the parts anymore.
Really?
Yeah. They're like, because they're heavy. It's 1952. There's no plastic stuff.
Yeah,
they don't. Right. They don't have the ability to lift up a. I don't know what the transfer case is. It's got to be at least 110 pounds or something like that. Or in the transmission, they even just the brake drums and stuff. They don't have the physical wherewithal because they haven't taken care of their body.
Right.
Every single one. Well, here right. I am. I'm no power lifter. I'm not getting up at 4 a.m. in the morning like you are every day. But yeah, I'm taking care of it because I want to be able to do stuff.
Well, the opposite of aggressive is what? Passive?
Yep.
Nobody's going to listen to the podcast called The Passive Life. You know, it's like, yeah, we already have that in our life. We actually would like to maybe have a little better vision for our life, you know? And it's like,
yeah.
I love what you just said. Aggressive isn't like, go do stupid stuff. But aggressive is let's take on some challenges and let's go new places and try new things. I bought my first horse at 62. It's like people
amazing.
Look at me like,
amazing.
What? And it's like, yeah. And I'm going to buy another one. And I'm going to, and God's opened up so many doors for that if I had not taken that step, like I've met so many great men and women in this industry that don't care if I'm Pastor Jim. They don't care about my church. They don't care about, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's just like, here's a dude. He's got a good story. And here we go. And that friendship, I think God will leverage in the future. I'm just trying to pay attention to what God's telling me to do. And, until he tells me to sit down and don't do anything, I'm going to keep on going. And that's what probably this back surgery has got me the most bummed out about is I'm going to have to sit in a chair for about a month. I'm going to drive everybody crazy. I'm a horrible patient. Mm. I don't know. I need to find a really good.
You have to sleep in the chair too?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Probably they said we try not to do pain meds more than 6 months. I'm like, 6 months. Like, wow. How about 4 days? I mean, I hate pain meds because they just mess with me. I either hate them because I know I'm an addictive personality. And if I don't hate them, I'll love them.
Right.
And I've just seen too many people get addicted to back pain and then pain meds. And then that's the rest of their life. They traded in one injury for an addiction. It's like, I'm really, really wary of that. That's why, like, every January, I like to take... I always do like 75 hard or something like that. No drinking, no tobacco, you know, clean diet. Just for like 75 days, just to recheck my system because I know what I'm capable of. You're like me, you have two speeds, 0 and 100. Like I don't sip a bourbon. I'm like, let's drink some bourbon. You know, I don't smoke a cigar. Like, let's smoke a pack. You know, it's like, I don't have that discipline of moderation. So every once in a while I have to take a time out and go like, hey, let's make sure everything's in check. Let's give your liver a rest. Let's give your lungs a rest. Let's give your body a little bit of a rest. And I'm playing a longer game. I think that's what I'm trying to do. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Right. Well, and you're doing different things. You know, you taking up horses at 62, most people don't do anything new once they graduate college. I mean, really, we just don't. Most people can't identify the last new hobby they did, the last new thing they did. Speak of camping, I didn't get into camping until I was much later in life. Most people, no, I tried it once when I was a junior high. I just don't do that thing. And you haven't tried it since. You don't do anything new since. You don't try new things. You can't be aggressive if you're not trying new things.
I agree. Totally agree with that.
Absolutely. So you are a good camper, though. It was awesome being with you at Man Camp. You gave the best talk that we've ever had at Man Camp, I believe. At least I liked it the most of any I've ever given or anybody else. It was just fantastic. And I'm this week going to re-give it in some way, shape, or form. You gave me your notes. Yeah. So I hope I don't screw it up too much. But you came in. And what'd you think of your first Man Camp, Uncle Jim?
I think I had certain expectations, and from the time that I drove through that campground, I'm like, okay, this is more. This is bigger. Not bigger numbers or stuff like that. I mean, this is more impact, like significant. That's the word. Something more significant than, 4,000 men, they have to carry their stuff in for a mile, and then they set up campgrounds and have a fire and, you know, take a dump in the woods. It's much, much more significant. Like, I felt that there's a few times when you walk into a space and go like, yeah, God's about to do something. I don't know what it is. Cause then I'll try to manufacture it. So I'm just going to pay attention to it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And so from the time I got there, to, to the time I've left, I went, this is really good. Like when on Saturday morning, when I had the opportunity to actually stand in front of those men and teach, I mean, I think that God, you know, through Dante, through you, through Justin, through all these, your staff and all that, I think I would have had to really get up there and take a dump on stage to ruin it, you know? To see that many men leaning in with an expectation of, I don't know what, and I don't know if they could put language to this. Like, I don't know what God has for me, but I think I'm supposed to lean in and pay attention to this moment. Not knowing that I'm going to spend an hour and a half in the woods unpacking this. Yeah. After that, they didn't know that was coming. But there was just this level of expectation, and that's, and I think that comes after 10 years of you building a culture that you've built there of, like, there were a lot of men there who were returning, but I met a lot of men there who were, my buddy brought me for the first time.
Personally, yeah, about 50-50 returning versus brand new people.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that person who brought their friend with them, like he was praying the whole time that their friend has that good experience. Yeah. You know, so they were vested in it. They didn't really care if they had a good experience about it. He's like, this is about my buddy. He just needs some hope, some life, you know, some friendship, whatever that is, some forgiveness, some grace, a vision, whatever that is. And so you could tell that everybody was rooting for God to do something in their friend.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't feel like, you know, a lot of church things are like, I'm writing a talk right now for this weekend. It's like, there's a lot of Christians that, like, you know, I don't really care about what's going on in the world, or I don't really have friends that aren't Christians. I just, you know, I'm not being fed, or I don't like the pastor, or I hate when they do this song and stuff like that. And so that's just, I like that. I didn't feel any of that there. I felt everybody there was, I don't even think they were there because camping's cool. I think it was like, I need to get away from everything with my friends in a place where God has done something in the past. And then I'm just going to watch what God does. And it happened. It was really fun. It was profane and beautiful and holy all at the same time. And, it was good. Really, really good.
Yeah. I wonder about that vibe that you felt when you came on the land. I feel the same thing too. And I'm not sure, love your opinion, if it is, just a different setting than I'm in normally because it's out in the country and that's it. If it's the number of people who are praying for the event, if it's, I'll give you one. It's like, this is a theory of mine. You know, angels are a finite resource. Angels aren't having sex, which
they
is.
They did. Genesis chapter 6, it didn't go well.
Right, that's right. Well, that's this is a boy. Okay, I'll share. This is an aggressive statement. I'm not trying to like rile anybody up, but this will definitely rile some up. I heard a number of people say, you know, the reason why we are so confused sexually and sexual stuff is happening outside of bounds all the time is that the demonic realm is jealous that they can't reproduce. So anything they can do to keep us from reproducing, they're going to do. It's a really interesting theory. But, you know, if I'm God and I have a finite resource, angels, I guess I could recreate more at any moment. You know, he could recreate more. But, you know, there's angels in the Bible that have names, Michael, Gabriel. He loses a third of his angels apparently with the fall, you know, kicked out of heaven. So if there's a third, again, a third is, all right, there's a number, the finite number. Anyway, however many he has, if you have a finite number of angels, I would have to think you'd say, I want to deploy these dudes, these warriors. Oh, there's Gus. Right there. That's Gus. Yeah. I would think if I was God, I want to deploy these places, these entities, the place of significance, which I would think a land where there's 4,000 dudes who are wanting to go after the heart of God or open to God, I think that'd be one of them. I think there's more angelic activity probably there than other places.
I think one of the reasons that sexuality. And I would even say this, the largest growing industry in the world right now is the exploitation and sale of children through trafficking. It's because those are the two things that are, Satan cannot attack God, so let's go after his image. Okay, and what's the most purest form of the image of God? It's a child, right? I think we'd agree with that. You know, they haven't screwed up too much. They haven't whatever. So we look at a child. That's the most innocent picture of goodness I can, right? And then sexualization. So like, yeah, so intimacy. So when a husband and wife joined by the Holy Spirit come together, he makes something new, right? Sexually, they became one, right? And that's called, you know, that's Adam knew his wife, that two became one flesh. So that's ultimate intimacy. So if he can take that and just reduce it down to, you know, that's why it's the worst cuss word we have. If I hate somebody, I say F you. If something's really bad, it's F'd up. That's my whole theology of the F word. And so the opposite of the intimacy that God wants for us is the F word. And right? And so like, I'm gonna go after the image of God and I'm gonna corrupt the most intimate act that portrays Trinity that I could possibly do and reduce it down to this just like dirty, shameful,
right,
guilt-filled, self-serving, the opposite of the intimacy of God. And I think that that's why that sexuality is such a big target, because one is we can't stop being sexual because God's created us that. It's not our identity, but it is. It is part of who we are, our masculine identity, right? And you can't just like, it's like, I can't just not eat because I have to have food and I can't stop being a man. So I think Satan draws a target on that and goes, I can destroy your image. I can't destroy God, but I can destroy the image bearer. Yeah. And I think that we feel that attack more than any other place in our life because we get those two things confused. But I do think that it's like, I think we're saying the same thing about like, the Satan is going to try to destroy anything that allows us to move towards something good and better. And mostly, a lot of us have been wounded sexually in our past, so it's fragile anyway, right? And you go back to, you know, third chapter of Genesis, it's like the curse is she screwed up in terms of her value. He screwed up in terms of where his value comes from. It's a perfect recipe. So that's why there's a target on it. Like I'm not really tempted to steal. Like I don't sit around and go like, oh, am I going to steal today? Am I going to steal today? But I do have some pretty dark sexual thoughts, not around stealing, but about, you know, rehearsing and thinking about and like, what if, and if I didn't get caught, yeah, you know, that's all those things that we let our minds go down. It's like, why is it uniquely that?
Hmm. More and you than think anything that's normal? Else. You think that's as normal as, I agree with you. You think that's a pretty normal statement that people are fantasizing, think about that more than they do about stealing or coveting or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
I think you're right. Yeah.
I'll just use me language. I do. Like, you know, I don't think about murdering anybody. I mean, I have. I've thought about taking stuff that's not mine. And I've been jealous and I've been envious and something like that. But if you put that in one pot and then put the time I've spent rehearsing sexual sin in a different pot, like one's a little kettle and one is a vat, you know?
Yeah. And, yes.
And like, and so like, do I think it's normal? I think it's common. I don't think that you're alone if you're going like, I bet I'm the only pervert that sits around things like that, right? And it's like, no, buddy, you're not alone. That doesn't make it right or give you an excuse. Like, oh, we're all, you know, we're all just guys, you know, we're all just, right. I just think it's like, what is it? 1 Corinthians 13 says, no temptations come upon you that's not common to everybody, but God's faithful. Yeah. And so, and I think, you know, I think that our one of the reasons that we give in to that so quick, when I give into that so quickly, is I isolate myself and go, nobody understands and I'm by myself. So why not? Does that make sense?
One of the things, it does. It does make sense. One of the things that I regularly have as far as a head tilt with you is around your level of candor, you know, you're one of the few people who, when you speak, I regularly, and I hear you, I regularly go, man, that took a lot of balls to say that. Wow, I can't believe you said that. And it's not saying that because of wanting the shock factor, but mm-mm. the level of vulnerability and just like cutting through is really, yeah, it's really impressive and intense. Where does that come from you? How is it that you feel that free to say some of those things?
I really am trying to live a consistent life. Like, I mean, there are certain rooms I'll say things in and won't say things in based on who's in that room. But for the most part, when I teach, like I was teaching a college class yesterday about like, how do you keep your spiritual life and then your professional life? Like how do you keep them separate? Like, I don't. Like, when I walk up on a stage, I'm just sharing with you what I'm processing with God. And then a bunch of people go like, how did you know? And like, cause a lot of us are processing the same thing. I'm just going to say it out loud. And leaders go first. So I'll say it. Anybody else want to raise their hand on that? And so many times even standing under that tent at man camp is like, I can only see maybe 1,000 men. I can't see the other 3,000, whatever, but I could see the heads nodding and I can see them, you know, like, oh yeah, that's me. Yes, keep going. Right. And so I don't know. It's like, I think that's integrity. I think that, especially when it comes to when I'm speaking to men, it's like, we don't have time for the bullshit. We don't have time for like, everybody okay with that? Did I hurt anybody's feelings? It's like, hurt my feelings. I don't have to agree with you. Just say it, you know? And it's like, finally, somebody's being truthful. I don't agree with you, but you know, it's like, well, I agree with some of it, whatever that is, but it's like, Brian, when you bring that up, it's like, there's no intentionality to that. Like, there's a risk, but I'm going to say it. I just say it, yeah. You know, like, so I can't point to going like, what do you, give me an example of what you're talking about. It's like, I don't know. I just like, I don't have time for the other thing right now. And nobody has time to listen to somebody that's going to like beat around the bushes. Like, hey, it's black and white. Like, right. I struggle with this. All right. It's like, I did this. This happened to me as a kid, you know, like there was a day when I never would have talked about getting sexually abused as a kid, all through elementary school, you know, I would hid that and all that kind of stuff. And then I didn't deal with it till I was 50.
Really? Was that late?
Oh yeah. Because I didn't think it was that big a deal. I didn't think it had affected me or anything. And then I start, you know, going like, oh, it's coming out here. Like you're overprotective of your son. And I'm like, yeah, I am, because nobody's going to hurt my kid, right? But in my mind, I kept him a child in my mind. And in his mind, my dad will fix everything for me. That comes from being abused as a kid. It's like, dude, would you ever connect those dots? No. Like, I don't have any close friends. That's right. You let people get close to you, they'll hurt you. So get rid of them first, right? Because, like, beat them to the punch, because everybody leaves you, you know? And so it's like, that can't be healthy, you know? And so... when I started dealing with that, when I started talking about even my, like the reason I have such a passion for men, broken men especially, is because I is one, you know? And it's like, there was a day when I've been in a room with strong men and it did not go well as a kid, right? So I can never be in a room with strong men because I know what my role is, let alone lead them. Like, if you would have told me, when I was in high school, college, one day I would stand in front of 4,000 men. I mean, these aren't boys. These are like I've always said, my retreat can beat up your retreat, but you'd outnumber us, you know, but it was like the same group, the same demographic is in both of our camps, you know? And it's like, when I stood up in front of a group of strong men, like SWAT team leaders and Navy SEALs, and I say, hey, this happened to me as a kid and this is how it came online and this is how I'm dealing with it. I lost count of how many like, cops and cowboys and whispering in my ear. That happened to me too. First time they'd ever said it out loud before. And it's like that, this is like, okay. And it took my breath, because there's some people I'm going like, no way. Because you're everything that every man wants to be. You're strong, you're athletic, you're rich, you're handsome, all that kind of stuff. And he goes, I'm broken. And all of this is a facade to hide that. It's like, that's what most men in that tent were wrestling with all weekend long. I am here because I want something real, but I'm terrified that all these men will find out that I'm I'm an imposter and I'm afraid of so much stuff. Like some of the comments on man camps, like what was your big thing, right? I burned fear. I burned fear in my campfire because they wrote down a word. Remember? They wrote down a word, the thing that's holding them back. I go back and look at some of the comments because I've been following man camp now, right? And it's like, I burnt fear. I burnt shame. I burnt pride. I burnt insecurity. And it's like, yeah, because we came in there with it and go like, and it's like, I really was going to have people like, we can never do this, but get a Sharpie and write the word across their forehead. Because anytime I talk to you, fear is in the way or pride or shame. It's right there. And it's like, you have to see me through my fear. You only get to see me through the fear mask I have on, you know, or whatever. I'm compensating for that. But it's like, I just don't have time at this juncture in my life. Like, I don't want to be famous. I don't want to be, I have enough money. I don't want to, you're the only gig I said yes to this year for speaking. So I don't want to go on a circuit. They keep pushing me to write books. And I'm going to talk to a guy about writing a book next week, but not because I want to write a book and sell books, but because it's like, he thinks it might be helpful to some people going through similar stuff. I'm like, okay, you know, but like, I guess I'm really selfish. I want to lead Flatirons for the next several years. I want to hang out here at the farm with Robin. I want to hunt birds with my dogs. I want to ride my horse. And if I do anything outside of that, it better be important. And I don't have time to kind of bullshit around about it. It's like, okay, Brian, I get one shot to speak to 4,000 men. I'm going to bring it. Yep. And you don't have to ask me back, but I'm going to bring it. Right. Yep. And like, and what I brought to him was just like the hardest question for me to believe is it possible that God actually loves me? Not just loves me, because he has to love everybody. I learned that from my first song in Sunday school, right? But he loves me like when he looks at me and looks at Jesus, he looks at us the same. He's like, whoa, no, the fall off between me and Jesus, it's so immense. But it came to me on stage that day. It's like, imagine God looking at Jesus, and then Jesus steps out of the way, and then you step in the picture, and his face doesn't change. That took my breath. I never said that before until in that moment right there. And it's like, because if that's true, like,
yeah.
Oh, then all right. So maybe some new things are possible.
Yeah.
For someone like
me. It does make sense. And that talk was brilliant, which is why, you know, I'm going to replay that talk. I'm giving you credit too when I speak at this.
You don't need to give me any credit for it, right?
It's appropriate. I'm going to do that. I don't know. Probably will have, I don't know, at that land when I give that talk, maybe 10,000 people will be outside that land for that thing. So it's men, that's women, right. Children, family, the whole thing. And that was just a really, it's an unbelievable picture of the gospel. It's something I'm still thinking on. And I think the other thing I loved is, you know, we didn't really pump your name much because we already had like Dante and Bear. And so we haven't done it before. We can't put I don't want to put another person like in marquee position that we're, you know, publicizing. But I knew you're going to freaking crush it. I just knew you were. It was like an ace in the hole, a total ace in the hole, because you're not on the speaking writing circuit, but it's for good cause. It's because you're actually building something. You're aggressively building a church, building an organization. Most of the people who write books and speak, I love the perks they have. I love when someone asks me to speak because it's a nice little fat check out of nowhere. But almost without exception, those folks have not built something, or they are not building something because
they're criticizing something somebody else built.
Excuse me?
They're criticizing something else that somebody else built. They're probably going, well, that's why it's wrong. Like, well, you build something, dude.
Yeah, why don't you? Yeah, try that.
Yeah.
So guys like, you know, you or I, or there's other folks who have built massive things, just generally don't excel at writing books and being on the speaking tour. Part of that's because it's a different skill set. Part of that's because we're kind of aggressively focused on the thing that we have before us, and the other stuff is a distraction. Mm-hmm. But
there was a day,
that's
though,
why I knew you were going to be awesome.
Yeah, there was. But I'll say this, Brian. All right, I mean, the highlight for me was walking down the road, talking to men. You know, hey, coming out of the mash tent and going like, tell me what's going on in there. Let's say, and it's like, we had the best conversations. People knew you're the only one that was known, right? They trust BT, right? And some of your key leaders, right? They came there to be with each other and be with God, right? They didn't care. Jim Bergen's going to be there. Well, I'm sure a few go like, oh yeah, I've heard of him or I follow him, whatever that is. But they were here because they trusted you and they trusted the experience from the past. And it's like, I don't know what's going to happen under that tent. But remember, I was talking about this. God does amazing things in the wilderness in tents.
Yeah.
All in tabernacles.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what it was like, holy ground. There, again, people walked onto that. Cause remember that first day we were riding around in the car and you were just like, you know, talking smack to everybody. And it was like, but there was like, everybody was like nobody was complaining about the long walk and nobody was complaining about the heavy load and nobody's complaining about it's too hot, it's too cold. Right? Nobody's going like, is Bear here yet? Or is Jim here? Is Dante going to sing tonight? Right? No, they just wanted to get it going and it being like whatever God's about to do here. Right. And yeah. I loved coming into that space going like, how great would it be? And this is going to sound whatever. How great would it be as if at the end of this weekend, nobody goes that Jim Bergen as much as that God, you know, like that's the only thing. Like
right.
They walk out there going like, right. Remember that when that dude, that really handsome bald dude on Saturday morning, talked about how much God loves us, you know, it's like, what was his name? God. God loves us, right? It's like that's important, you know. And like, and I know I've already put dates on my calendar that like there's like a 50 or 100 of us. We're planning on doing a week long, 2 day drive out, 2 nights there with you, 2 days home. You know,
it's like, are you really?
That's what we're gonna try to do.
Oh my gosh.
You know, and like I said, I don't care. I mean, I love being a part of it, but I would come there and camp to be a part of it. Just to be a part of that experience. It was that good and that meaningful. And I can't put my finger on what part of it was.
Yeah.
One of my favorite parts was sitting in the woods was it Saturday night before it started raining and they were interviewing you and me and Dante or something like that. And in the distance we heard, oh, and then over another ridge, right. Oh, and then over there, yeah. Oh, and it's just like, oh, they're communicating. And
you got a new man camp thing going. That's going to be a new thing for sure.
Yeah. Oh, and it shakes the earth, shakes the gates of hell. When you get 4,000 men doing a war cry, yeah. It's like, as I said, Satan just crapped his pants because it's like the most threatening thing in the universe is 4,000 men unified around a mission. Right.
Right.
Cause one of your questions that you sent me, like we might get to this, we might not, is like, what do you think the state of men is? Like in the world, right, in America. And when I'm driving away from that is good and getting better. How about that?
Hmm.
Right? There's a lot wrong. There's a lot wrong.
Right.
But that's all we talk about. But I drove away from man camp back to the airport going, it's not all bad. It's some of it's really good. And I just got to sit ringside to really good and the good's moving towards better. Like, that's... Yeah. We need to talk about the good getting better rather than men these days are just, you know, blah, 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 blah. Not all of us are. Right?
There's a lot of reports out. No, we're not. Yeah, there is some progress being made. And there's a lot of reports out about young men coming back to church, young men being engaged in their faith. And I am seeing that, but I'm not seeing it to the degree that I'm reading about it. Are you seeing a huge swell of young men coming back into the fold? Personally, mm-hmm. Are you seeing that?
Yeah, I really am. So the week after Charlie Kirk, our attendance jumped 2,000 and has stayed there. And
and
most of them are in their 20s and 30s and a lot of men. So we are seeing that. We're seeing, I hang around the... Between services, I'll hang out down in the front a lot. And my line is primarily young men right now. Like, where do I go? How do I connect? Like, I've been to church in years and years and years. Or I grew up here as a kid and then we left. And now I'm like, I'm drawn back. And I think that Charlie Kirk is not the reason, but maybe the event that's a catalyst. Like, maybe I should pay attention, like, to this or that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of studies out there, like, there are more Bibles being sold than in the history of our country, and it's to the under 20 crowd, under 25 crowd, excuse me, that's buying them. I'm seeing men, young men, ask me questions much more about marriage than ever before. Men want to get married and women don't. You know, it's like, that's interesting. You always hear about men wanting to go sow their oats and women just want to settle down. It's like, whoa, I'm seeing the opposite of that. And I think that there's a level of frustration on both sides. I think a lot of women have gone like, there are no good men to like biblically submit myself to, join myself to, become one with. And so it's like, that's not even safe. So either I don't need a man or I'm going to redefine, who is it that said this? A woman will try to create the man that she'll marry and end up hating him because she's created him in an image of what she thinks she wants, and it's not what she wants at all. And so women are frustrated with that, but I think men are going like, I'm tired of, what's the right word? Just the emptiness, the loneliness, the appearance thing, the porn's not doing it for me anymore. The buddies and that I can't really trust anymore. There's just nothing that I can trust. And so I think out of frustration, they're just, you know, I'm seeing a lot of younger men.
Right.
Absolutely.
Well,
not becoming like nicer, but going like, screw all this. I'm gonna follow Jesus. And I'm seeing that. It's not like they're making an adjustment in their life. They're going, I'm rejecting all of that and coming in a new direction.
It is cool. And it's eye-opening to see if there isn't just a complete role reversal in the sexes that goes deeper than we might have thought. You know, I mean, it was just the ones that most of us talk about a lot is women are more educated than men. 70% of graduate school attendance is made up of women. Women are therefore making more money than men are. Women are, which is completely contrary to history. Historically, men have been the most educated. Historically, men have made the most money. Historically, it has been only women who've been the stay-at-home parent. And now, of course, there's a lot of men who are becoming the stay-at-home parent for a lot of different reasons. And this is another one. Like, historically, women have been the more sensitive ones spiritually. Women have been the ones who have been wanting to get married. And it's interesting that may be flipping too, that men may be becoming the ones who are more sensitive spiritually. Men may be the ones who maybe want to get married more than women. It's interesting how a lot of that is being flipped.
Well, I think it's actually returning to what it was supposed to be. We're just coming through a season right now where men are said, you can be a boy forever, right? You don't need an education. You don't need to make a job. Just let mama take care of you. Don't take any responsibility. Just blame and run away and, you know, sit in the basement and play imaginary games and masturbate and like, and that's all you need. And it's like, we gave men permission to stay boys until their 40s or 50s. Right. And then women had to say, well, I got to move on then. Right. Yeah. Good for them. Right. Yeah. Like I said this in a sermon last week, I don't know. It's like the strongest people on the planet are single moms because not because they carry double weight, they carry exponential weight because they have to. You know, like you go to certain countries and women are running the church because the men, there's no church if the women don't run it because men are off, you know, whatever that is. And I think it's the same thing. It's like, hey, nobody's going to take care of us. I can't depend on the men. They're all in their mom's basements. So I've got to go to school. I got to make some money. I've got to be, right? Because, and I think now men are going like this, doesn't work. This is what was handed to me, but I'm seeing the ruin of it right now. And I see men leaning back into working hard with their hands. I see a lot more men wanting to work outside, work with their hands. Even, you know, your computer people, stuff like that. They're choosing some hobbies that are like outdoorsy hobbies because it's like, I was made for this, right? And I've missed it. And I'm not saying you have to bench press your house or, you know, hunt elk in the mountains or something like that to be a man, but there's just something in our makeup that desires wilderness and challenge and air and space, right? You feel me?
Well,
huh?
The Bible says that the woman is the weaker vessel, which is a very inflammatory verse. It's a very inflammatory verse. But the easiest way to just interpret that, which is generally true, is, yeah, men are built for physical things more than a woman is built for. There's very, you know, very men are going to be able to bench press more. Men are, I mean, any comp, that's why there's men's sports and women's sports, because men and testosterone and muscle mass are on a different level.
Have you been to Colorado?
We're kind of wired. I said there's exceptions. Yeah. I know women, I know women personally who can out push up their husband, you know, and no shame on their husband or them. I'm just saying generally, that's just scientifically the way it is, right? So yeah, it makes sense that we as men who are not putting those muscles into action would start to maybe do our own landscaping, because we have a need to use my muscle mass.
Here's the challenge, okay? What are we going to do with these boys coming back? Because we have a whole generation. It's like, I'm making it up as I go. It's like, that's where I think that some of the older men, especially if we can mobilize the older third of man camp to take, to come alongside the younger third of man camp. Like I would say two-thirds, I say I can't change the oil in my truck because it has too many computers. And I just got my wife a Tesla. There's no oil. But I don't know how to do that either. But it's I would say that just the basic skills of repairs around the house or landscaping or hiking or whatever that is, it's like there's a whole generation going, it's like, I don't even know how to change a tire. Right? So why in the world... No. You know, and that's why I was, you know, when I was really leaning into the initiation of boys by their husband or by their dads, it was like my biggest fear was I get uninitiated dads out there trying to initiate their sons. Right. And when the son makes a mistake, all that baggage gets dumped on that son. It's like, whoa. And so I think that there's a growing need. You want to talk about the aggressive life? We need some aggressive mentors to come alongside some boys going, hey, I don't like what the world says I am and have to be and what I have to conform to. But I need a man. My dad's gone. Yeah. My dad didn't know how to do it. But I think the most aggressive thing a man could do is pour his life into a fatherless boy or a leaderless young man and come alongside him and going like, no. I've been married. I'm coming up on 42 years this summer being married, right? I figured some stuff out. Maybe the biggest thing I can do is like, you only been married 3 years. And you think you're going to call it quits? Come here. I've been there so many.
Well, times. You said that. What would it be like to have? I think your original question: have the older third mentor the younger third. And my knee jerk immediate instinct is: there's only about a third of the older third that I would want to mentor anything. Two thirds of that older third, I would say, fine. You can teach someone how to change a tire. Most men have not stewarded their life well. Most men have not figured out how to keep a marriage together. Most men have not figured out how to go after fresh dreams. Most men have not figured out how to self-discipline themselves. Mm-hmm. And they haven't figured that out, probably because they didn't have somebody help them figure it out. You know,
so how do we break that? How do we break that cycle? I can't think of a bigger charge for our life.
Yeah, I'll tell you one way we do is whenever I'm around someone like you, and this is a question I wanted to ask you, who's 3 years ahead of me, is say, Jim, how do you do it? Seriously, man, you're 63. You have just as much fire as you did when I first met you at 55, I think, when I first met you. You're doing new hobbies. You're doing new things. You're sleeping on the ground on a camping opportunity. You're pushing yourself. Like, what? So I would ask, what is it? What's your secret? What do you do? How do I stay fresh throughout life? Because you know you're not normal. You already mentioned it because you're hanging out with mostly younger dudes. Because people our ages are phoning it in. Mm-hmm. So what is it? What's the nugget of worldview that you've maintained for your life as you look forward for your life? What is it?
I always want to be a learner. I don't ever want to stop learning new things, trying new things, challenge myself in new ways. And so that would be one thing. It's like I don't have to do anything I'm doing. I could coast, and it's like I can't think of anything worse than going, okay, I'm just gonna play it safe and then retire and then, you know, just do my hobbies. It's like, you've been on my porch at my cabin. I build that cabin so I can sit with men and go like, all right, talk more about that. My favorite part of this week was yesterday, was sitting in a room with like 50 college students and just answering their questions. Yeah. And the questions were about like, how do you grow spiritually? What's the hardest leadership lesson you've ever had to learn? What's the toughest thing about this? When it comes to your marriage, what have you done here? How has ministry affected you and your children? And like, just pouring all this out. Like, what's the hardest thing ever happened in your life? Now, I got college students asking, what's the hardest thing ever happened in my life that's carried on into my adulthood? And I'm like, okay, here we go. Back in elementary school, all this happened to me. Again, but I was able to, because of the time and space I've had in there, is I was able to say the worst thing that happened to me, I guess everybody on paper would be you got hurt as a child. But again, that didn't. What it did is it rewired part of me to go like, don't be weak. So I've got that wolf chasing me all my whole life. And so when you have that wolf chasing you, don't be weak, don't fail, don't show that that's all you are. You can build a big ass church. You can drive a big truck. You can go to the gym a lot. You can shoot big elk, all that kind of stuff. Because if you don't, right? So like, what's it like, you know, has ministry caught you or caught, you know, affected your marriage? No, ministry is just the platform that I engaged in, but I would do the same thing as a banker, as an IT guy, as a cop. I would have run from the same demons of don't be weak, don't fail. And church wasn't my problem. This was my problem, right? Don't fail, don't be weak. When I got put on sabbatical a few years ago, it's because my identity was nickels and noses. If everything was up and to the right, attendance was going up, campuses are going up, offerings going up, blah, 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 is going up, blah, blah, blah. As then I have value and I have worth. And then it plateaued and I went, right? And then God put me in timeout and I said, give me back my church. And he says, not your church, my church. And I stomped my foot and I built it. Like my goal was to show, I can do this ministry thing. I don't even need God. I mean, that's how sick it got. Mm-hmm. You know, but I would have done the same thing as a cop. I would have done that same thing as a banker. I would have done that thing as whatever. If I was an entrepreneur, if I was a business person, I'd make millions. Because to not means I'm just a kid in a barn, and that's all I'm worth, right? So, but to be able to speak to 20-year-olds, 19 and 20 and 21-year-olds, going, hey, on the front end of this, right? Here's what I'm learning. And it'll never go away. And then you can see the kids that have been hurt as children in the room going like he's talking about my thing, right? And I even said that. I didn't look at the audience. I looked around. I can see by the Philippine people's faces, my story is your story. I'm always available to you, but here's what I want you to hear. And the room's not breathing. And so when you talk about being authentic and real, that would be it. But how do I keep on going? How do I stay fresh and whatever? It's like, well, I'm ADD, so maybe that's why I'm always.
So you can't
like
focus
this.
On any one thing for very long. So therefore, you're always fresh because you're squirrel.
But I don't know that that's a bad thing. It's like
no, it's not bad.
I don't get one tattoo; I get my whole body tattooed. I don't hunt. You know, I don't buy a gun. I hunt elk and then shoot long distance. I don't. You know, it's like I always want to be fully in something because I want to learn it as much as I possibly can. Because then that's how God speaks to me. Guys, when I'm on a horse, God speaks to me. When I'm in the mountains, I hear from God. When I'm driving in my truck, I hear from God. You know where I don't hear from God? In a library. I just don't. I hear from God when I'm sitting in a duck blind talking to men or sitting in my barn talking to another horse guy and he brings up a word and I said, what was that word? And then I write a sermon off that word. It's just like, you know, it's like, the other thing is like, I involve myself in stuff that doesn't have anything to do with my career. Like my horse doesn't care what attendance was this past week, right? And it doesn't matter if I spoke for 4,000 men in Ohio last weekend. When I get back here, my dogs are like, I don't care. Throw the ball, right? And it's grounding. It's like the life of a megachurch pastor. He gets up in the morning, goes to the barn, he shovels a wheelbarrow full of horse shit. He dumps that. He feeds the horse. He goes and he preaches for a bunch of people. He comes home. He warms up a Stouffer's in the microwave. He has a drink. He watches football for a while, and then he goes and shovels another thing of shit, and then feeds the horse again, and then he goes to bed. It's like very glamorous.
Oh, you're not saying shoveling the shit is your job, because that's what I feel like my job is. You're literally doing our job.
We're doing that's good.
But
yeah,
it is more metaphorical, but it's for real. I was shoveling some this morning, getting all stinky with people.
Yeah, but it's grounding. It's like if you're gonna shovel shit, horse shit's the better shit to shovel. That's a tongue twister. But it's like it's grounding because it's like it's dirt. Right. And sawdust and hair and, you know, mud and water. And it's just like this. I can deal with it. And I can count on it. It's grounding. I go up and I stack rocks and make a fence out of it, or I chop wood, or I try to send a 60 gram piece of lead down range and hit a little thing. It's very, very measurable and very, very consistent, stuff like that. And then then I drive 30 minutes over to my office, and it's like, now I'm dealing with people. And it's like, Yeah. So I think one refreshes the other, if that makes sense.
Yeah, completely does.
Yeah.
Well,
How do you do it? How do you stay fresh? I'm going to turn that on you. If you burst into tears and say I'm not fresh, we'll have to turn this podcast off.
I feel pretty fresh right now. I think I try to pay attention to new things that are intriguing me. That's where my freshness comes. If I'm doing like the same old, which is a part of what we do, what anybody does to do really well in your career. You've got to know the basic marks you have to hit, and you've got to hit those marks regularly and faithfully. But there does come a point where if you're not introducing new stimuli, new experiences, it just doesn't do it for you. So new hobbies, like I would have thought that my only thing would have been adventure motorcycling. That's all I'm going to do. Well, you know what? It got old. I still do it to hang out with my son, but I'm more in the hunting thing because it's something new. Something I'm learning. I think that's one. I think another one is just new people, new thoughts. Whenever there's something new or new place I can be in, like this guy where I hunted his land, what I did also was he's a cattle rancher. So I was on a cattle drive and I said, I got to make sure that I take time off my day job to be there. And I got really fresh. Like I learned on a cattle drive, I didn't even know this. You do a cattle drive because you're trying to drive them to a pen to where you're giving them inoculation and you're cutting off the balls of all the young males. Like, duh, I didn't even think of this. Of course, if you're a cattle rancher, you're not wiping out the young females you need to... Right. All you need is like, this guy had like, I don't know, 6-7 bulls in a herd that all they did is screw things all day long, just going up mounting, licking and screwing things all day long, because you just need that. The other ones, all the ones you're killing is all the young males. And that for me, like the light bulbs went off, like, oh my gosh, that's exactly what we're doing in our culture, is we're castrating all the young males. Castrating them all. We don't have
and then eating them for lunch.
We don't have a vision. Yes. And that's exactly what the statistics show. We are castrating them. They are not reproducing. They don't have a vision for the future. And they are getting eaten up and tore up by what's in our culture. Man, I lived on that for a year. But it had to take me being in a new environment. So I'm looking for those new environments. That keeps me fresh.
Yeah. So good.
Well, I even like Lib right now. It's not a new environment I would have wanted. But even her going through chemo, we've got one more chemo thing to go. It's a new, fresh environment. It's an environment I hate. I don't like anything. The only thing I like about it is my friends have been cooking meals for us. That's been awesome. Everything else has been horrible. But it is something new. You know, you're experiencing stuff you hadn't experienced before. You're thinking things you hadn't thought before. And I think that's helped me stay a bit fresh.
Yeah.
Jim, this has been fantastic. You've been very generous with your wisdom. And you got a lot of wisdom, man. You're a deep well. It's really, really good. Anything
else?
I've made
a lot of mistakes. I can share that. So, you know, we all have. Go. Sorry.
Well, God doesn't waste anything, and those mistakes have made you who you are. It's really good. Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to talk about that we haven't talked about?
Yeah, can I come back to man camp sometime?
Yes, you can. I was just already thinking, like, if you're planning on coming back no matter what next year, it's going to be really hard for me to, like, not have you have an official role, given that you're the reigning champion on Powerful Talks.
Yeah.
Really well, good.
You know what? You might take my talk, and then is it your revival this coming up soon?
Yes.
Revival weekend? Your
yes.
revival?
This weekend, yes.
You're gonna take it to another level, you know? So it's going to be great.
Well, I'll make it a bit my own, but the heart and the genesis of that talk is great, and it is it's awesome. So we'll do that. And Chandler's going to be with us next year too, so we'll figure that out. That could be fun. Yep. Jim, if you want to, if someone wants to follow up with you, get a hold of some of your stuff. Where do they go? What do they do?
Yeah, well, you made a brief mention it from stage at Man Camp. Just the herd. So theherd.com. And so then you can follow me there, but you can also find ways to get involved in leadership development. So the herd is about, so the local church, I believe, takes people far from God and turns them into disciples, right? The herd wants to take followers of Jesus and turn them into leaders of men. So it's spiritual based leadership development. And so, we'll put men in cohorts, that they take a share in the leadership of that cohort, and our cohorts are spread across the country, based on a lot of different variables. And, they meet together a couple of times a month via Zoom calls and things like that, which I never thought you could create intimacy and trust through screens.
Yeah.
I was wrong. And so theherd.com would be a place to start. If you forget that, myname.com, it takes you to the same place. And, always feel free to reach out, to me just through flatironschurch.com, through an email there. I had several men, reach out to me, from Man Camp. Here's what I would caution is like, hey, cause, and I think your answer would be the same way. Hey, will you call my friend, or will you call my dad, or will you call my son? It's like, the answer is no, but you can have them reach out to me anytime and go like, hey, my dad said I should reach out to you, and I'll do my best to get back to him in a timely manner. But, what you're doing, well, at Crossroads, but what you're doing through your whole camp culture is breathtaking and life-giving. And I just want to honor what God's doing through you all. And you have a tremendous leadership group around you. Wow.
Yeah.
Like that would make that, we surround ourselves with leaders that make us look much better than we are, you know?
And, 100% right. Yes.
And,
yes.
And you've done that well. So please pass that on to them as well. And I'll be praying for Libby.
Thank you, my friend.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Jim and I talked about a lot of significant stuff here. What is it for you coming out of this conversation? Is it you need to do something fresh that you haven't done for a while? Is it you need to stop excusing your age as a reason not to do something new? Is it that you need to, I don't know what it is, but there's a lot here that's important for you to stay fresh and push forward. I hope you got that. You got it. Great. You got to do it. Do it. That's what we do here at The Aggressive Life. We'll see you next time on The Aggressive Life.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, bro. Thanks for joining us on this journey toward aggressive living. Find more resources, articles, past episodes, and more at bryantome.com. My new book, a 60-day devotional called The 5 Marks of a Man, 60 Days to a Powerful Life, along with all the other books in the 5 Marks library, are open right now on Amazon. Be sure to leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. Then send an email to dirt@bryantome.com to get a free Aggressive Life sticker. Find more on Instagram @bryantome. The Aggressive Life is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio.